You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting program and show, the Concierge Coaches Show, here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Neil Williams.
Good afternoon.
It is a good afternoon.
It is a good afternoon.
It doesn't feel quite as hot today.
Huh?
I feel like I said that last week. It doesn't feel like it's quite as hot today.
No, it isn't. I was actually outside here at the back office, I call it, and was able to sit out there for a few minutes and not burn to death. So that was great.
Is it direct sunlight?
Huh?
Is it direct sunlight? Is it for you?
Yeah, right now there is, yes. In the afternoon there is. Direct sunlight in the afternoon. Not in the morning. We're blocked. That's good. So we get a little bit of shade in the morning, but it's on in the afternoon here, back there with the western sun coming in. Woo! So, and the heat in Vegas went to the Conor McGregor fight and everything, but man, it was just so hot. It was so hot. So I would actually get coffee at the coffee shop in the hotel, which was, of course, way far away from my room. So I got my steps in to the coffee place, but
it's like a mile walk.
And they're like, and you want it hot? Like, oh yeah, no, I want it hot. Okay, you realize it's 115. Yeah, I know. So anyway, I just had to have the hot coffee. Anyway, so it was a fun fight. Got to see Dustin Poirier win. He'll probably win again if he gets another chance to fight McGregor. So what?
Well, certainly now.
It was good. It was good. I talked to a fighter. I don't know if you saw the picture, but Chris, and she's carrying around her Bellator champion, but.
Yes,
she used to be with UFC, but now, you know, she's down there. I'm like, hey, man, that's good. Try to coach her up, man. Get her back into UFC, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's kind of like being the head waiter at Golden Corral down there in Bellator, but no, it's good. It's good to see everybody go in there and do what they can. So
yeah,
it just tells you in combat sports, man, you're it's hard to hold on, you know, like even with Connor, you know, man, 2016-17, and now it's just, you know, the expiration date on some of these fighters, man, it can go out at any time. So
yeah, I think any professional athlete has the understanding that this could end any time. So you start to, when you start to understand that, you are a little bit easier on them when it comes to the big contract seeking, and you understand maybe why.
Right. Well, talk about that. Now you know why somebody like Connor would sign a 4 or 6 fight contract, because it keeps you in the game.
Yeah.
You might have expired after fight 2.
Yeah, but I do like that he still fights at all.
After getting
$600 million for his whiskey company.
Yeah, no, I mean,
he don't have to do anything.
And then $175 million down from crypto.com. Every fighter had a crypto.com shirt coming in on the walkouts. And I told you about the $800,000 dinner. I talked about that last week.
Yeah, so
money's just flying, man. Unbelievable. So anyhow, let's talk a little bit about reentry. We had talked about that some last week, and let's continue on that. And I know you had talked about some things, particularly about employment, first and foremost, the person coming out of rehab or coming out of jail. And, you know, I'll go first on this. So in federal prison, you can get a job, right? Mm-hmm. Many federal prisons, not all, but many have what's called Unicor factories. It's a factory, right? And Unicor does all kinds of things, right? From flight reservations to building furniture to taking contracts. I remember I was at a prison that had a contract with Ray-Ban. You know, all the inmates had Teardrop and aviators and actually making sunglasses in prison using prison labor. So anyhow, so this person's making 55 cents an hour, 4 years. Now comes out into a halfway house. I'll just say Volunteers of America, because that's what's here. They go to the halfway house, and they have a job developer in the halfway house. This is for the feds. Person checks in from the pen, has 14 days to find a job. And the reason why they have 14 days to find a job is because the halfway house wants its money, right? The subsistence pay. So there's obviously halfway house is getting paid by the government, but they're getting paid by the client as well, right? So anyway, so we have a job developer who's there on staff. That's all that person does is find people jobs. And obviously, a place like Volunteers of America, that's been an icon here in the Metroplex forever and ever. As a matter of fact, their world headquarters is here, for whatever that's worth. Anyhow, and the guy says, I don't want this job you're giving me at this restaurant. It's beneath me. And then I'm like, dude, you were making 50 cents. Yeah, but I was Unicor grade one. Like, he was flexing. It's 50. Relative to the other inmates that were making 30 cents, you're the man. Anyway. Isn't that funny, Neil? I mean, how could that happen? What kind of thinking happens to people that they're now in society or super close to it, and somehow the rules have changed? So
I think a lot of us being people who have been living our own lifestyle and forcing our way of thinking on it, on the universe, as I like to see it, and we're going to live a certain way and we have our rules. And this is also why a recovery program is important after you get sober, because there's a level of pride that has to be addressed. And if you don't address that, it pours and seeps into all areas of your life. And this is no different, to come out and act as if though you are better than that. And why would I do that? You know, service is beneath you. No, I'm not going to take out the trash for you. No, I'm not going to make coffee for anybody else. Y'all can do your own shit. I'm not working for that low pay. That's for those people. Ooh. Those people are us. We are all those people. And until you prove otherwise, you absolutely should be willing to do that. You asked for it. You asked for it by committing felonies. You asked for it. And you asked for that 55 cent an hour. You asked for that. Nobody came and found you at your mother's house when you were seven and said, you're going to become this and I'm going to force this on you. You know, we chose that lifestyle. And so there's that accountability and ownership. And that it talks about it in AA, the leveling of our pride. And that's why service is a big part of the 12-step program.
Absolutely.
Service is huge because it shows you that it's none of us are above that. And it's also why any true leader, you can talk to Simon Sinek does a good job of this. And I'm drawing a blank. John Maxwell does a good job of this in leadership training. Talks about service, servanthood. Any true leader, and these are guys who are making a lot of money and helping a lot of people, talk about service, talk about how being a servant and having that attitude that nothing is below you. If the place is dirty, sweep it.
Right.
It's not, where's the man with the broom? Where's the janitor? You know, where's the maintenance guy? There's a broom right there.
Yeah.
You know, you found him. It's you. It's the janitor is the guy with the broom. And so that, here's the truth of that. When you look at it that way, you move a lot quicker. You move much quicker. And not only does that happen, but you feel better about your life because you're immediately involved. You're immediately engaged. And it doesn't feel good to be the guy sitting in the back of the room with his arms crossed saying, I'm not going to do anything. It's not a good feeling. That's a place of anger, resentment, loneliness, and stagnant, you know? Those are the first things that come to mind. All of that I think about when you talk about the, simply someone saying, no, I'm not going to work for that. All that stuff comes to mind.
Yeah.
But it's not saying that you'll only, there are guys who have good opportunities. I have a friend right now who just got out. He's been gone for 5 years and he just got a great opportunity offered to him. I just got off the phone with him and he's telling me about it. And he has a great job opportunity and it's awesome. It doesn't happen every day. And when it happens, be grateful for it. But he also didn't come out here and he's been looking for jobs while he's been also confined to the home. He's been online looking for jobs. And he found one by reaching out to somebody looking for a job, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but the idea is that if that's all you can find and that's what's available, you take it and you take it with a grateful attitude because, and I love reminding people, my first steps were, a staffing agency and they had me take an assessment test and I failed it. I failed it somehow. I think it was, I was too honest about something and they said I didn't qualify. I was like, you mean I don't qualify to do anything like haul rocks or anything? They're like, no, nothing. And, so I got pretty upset about it and I said, well, when can I do it again? And they said in 6 months. I was like, well, I don't have 6 months to wait. So I went and found another job and it was drying windows at a car wash. And that was, I think it was $7.95 an hour because I remember I got my first raise and it was to $8.25.
Hmm.
And I remember being excited about it.
Especially out there. I was in West Texas, right?
Yeah. Well, but I mean, there were also the guys in the oil field who were making like, $27 an hour with just knuckleheads throwing cash around, having me detail their dirty truck and, you know, tattoos on their face, talking about this and that, telling me to come work out there. But it wasn't right. It wasn't for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I know.
But what do you... And since we're talking about reentry and jobs, the other thing that happens a lot, this is big in the roofing industry, selling roofs,
knocking doors, man. Yeah.
Making a lot of money too. And not staying sober, not staying out of trouble. So when people, 90% of the guys who I work with, when I start working with, they say, Neil, I just need to get a job. That's the answer, right? I just need to get a job and it'll be all good. To get a job, selling roofs, sell some big roofs, get some big checks. Don't hear from them for, say, 12 on average, 12 to 16 days. And when I do hear from them, it's not a good phone call. It's a, please come pick me up. I don't know where my truck is. It's a, please come pick me up. I just got out of jail.
Yep.
It's a, please come pick me up. I just got kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
I've been up for 4 days. Please come pick me up. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you're knocking doors for roofs, which, man, me and you know Willie, right? And we know some, and I know tons of roofers, man, and you know, over the years, because that is kind of a felon friendly, you know, industry. And but man, I think it's a good job to have, because you eat what you kill type of thing, you know, but you got to get out there and knock, you know, knock the doors. And some people go like, man, I can't do this. You know, I can't do it. There's not a lot of stability out there. I'm like, yeah, man, that's right. So what are some other things you can do that might, whatever, have more of a steady paycheck or what have you, you know, that you might want to look at? Cause it's fine and well in the spring, but it gets hot, and that owner of that roofing company is expecting you guys to knock on, right, so many doors by whatever. So anyway, but that, I think that's a great job, man. Roofing can be a really good career. Home renovations, home remodeling, writing up those jobs and those tickets.
Yeah. When it teaches you skills, it'll save you a lot of money in the long run in your own life when you're buying a home. But this also brings up why it's important for me when I'm working with these dudes. The emphasis has to be, okay, great, you're making a lot of money selling roofs, but let's make sure that you're focusing on the other stuff that's really important, like how you're going to be healthy. Are you going to therapy? Are you getting these meetings? Are you working steps? Whatever it is that you, not everybody's an addict or an alcoholic, so whatever it is, are you addressing that stuff? Are you handling probation, parole? How are your relationships? And then for the guys who are upset about not having a job like that, hey, the job's not going to solve all your problems. So this is okay. Take what you can get. And then in your other time, let's focus your energy on helping people, getting involved. Because I remember I talked to you in 2000, and I think I was just checking in with you because I was going to be coming back to town. And I said, hey, do you still do the Tuesday night meeting? I'd like to come by and see who you got in your group, just to be, because I was at that time in my life, I was looking for anybody to help, anybody, like anybody who was young and lost. I was looking for anybody because I knew I needed to do that. And I remember you said, what are you doing? And I said, man, I'm just working, going to meetings, going to the gym, and going home. And that's all I have time for. And I remember you said, you know, that sounds like it's probably a good thing. And I said, absolutely right. I said, it is a good thing. And it was. And when people complain about that, it's like, what you've been doing with your free time the last decade isn't good. So maybe you should fill it up with some good stuff.
Exactly. And
start there.
Exactly. Yeah. So like you said, make sure that the person is living or whatever, doing, not only working, which is great, but men do overemphasize that. They are, all I need to do is get a job and I'll be fine. And like, hold on a minute. And that's why we, like you said, we have these aftercare groups and addressing relationships and where they're living and who their friends are, how they spend their money. Does it burn a hole in their pocket, or are they saving? Are they being a good steward of the resources that they're earning? So yeah, that opens up a can of a lot more issues that we have to deal with. The thing about women coming out of prison, if you look at a dude who's coming out of prison, usually that dude's like, yeah, I just got to get a job and that's it, find a place to live. Man, these women, they have to go out, find a place to live, if not have to deal with family or whoever. 95% of them are parents to children. So now they're right into, you know, and whoever has been taking care of their kids wants them to start making money, you know, making money immediately to help take care of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a relationship. Either they're running from a relationship, people are hitting on them in the halfway house or whatever. sorting out some stuff. So they have relationship issues right from the get-go.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yes. A lot of the ladies had a girlfriend that they, you know, did their time with, the walkie. And they were drawing from that. And I would always say, hey, are you, how are you dealing with, you know, not having your girlfriend? How'd you know I had a girlfriend? Like, please.
What a secret.
I was down for 10 years. Okay. So back to my question. So women have to wear like 10 hats. And a lot of times the guys just wearing the job hat, maybe one other. So when we talk about women in reentry, man, that is, you know, there's just a lot more that they have to endure, you know?
Yeah. Make a really good point. Yeah. And I think that's not, I mean, we don't, I say we, society tends to give women a harder time as opposed to giving them credit for the amount of things that they do and they shoulder. And this is no different. And women who are coming from, because we're always talking about how important it is to give people second chances. And you got to acknowledge all those things you just listed. That's real stuff.
And, well, I'm glad you brought that up. I've had some white collar women come out, you know, out of prison here to the Metroplex. There is no love. It seems like people like, oh, you're a female felon and did federal time. I mean, it's almost like you're double the leper. You know what I mean? Because that's kind of an odd thing. First of all, second, you did federal prison time and you're a woman. And oh my gosh, you must've been super bad. Who does that? And that's a fair question, because only 7% of the federal prison system is female.
Seven? That's a low number.
So, you know, and that's what I told people, you know, like, hey, man, you know, I worked 6 years in a women's penitentiary here, you know, at all levels, maximum security, women's death row, everything. Anyway, but there's a reason why they're there. So it's not for singing too loud in church. I mean, you know, so you got to think about that statistical wall there. Like, wow, you know, okay, maybe 8%, you know, on some years. But when it comes to their recovery, it is multifaceted. And there's a lot going on there with kids, with family, with relationships. And then they always get screwed on the pay scale, right? The guy sitting next to them in the recovery group is making $4 an hour more than the woman. To this day, 2021, ladies, I mean, the pay disparity is real on some of these jobs, okay? And taking the women's recovery piece from an institution is really challenging on every level, and sociologically, you know, challenging as well. All right.
It's interesting. Mm-hmm. So other than the job, you've also got your vehicle.
Car.
And your residence. The vehicle thing. If you're not in a big city with public transportation, it presents a real issue. Because like you said, if you're on supervision, so if you came out of prison or jail, there is a state representative, as I like to call them. Anybody working for the state is a state representative to me. I just call them a state representative.
It's not the elected office either. Yeah.
That's just what guys like me know you as. Like, oh, you work for the state? You're a representative. You represent all that I hate.
There you go.
That they're not just encouraging you, but they're pushing you to get a job, because there's the probation fees, there's the UA fees, and you don't have a choice on those. You have to report, you have to submit UAs, you have to do these things, and you have to take classes, you have to pay surcharge fees. There's all this stuff that's piling up. I remember when I got out of jail, after being gone a year and a half,
right, I got
a bill for a couple thousand dollars, and I I just looked at it and I was like, how does this work?
Like, who billed you? State?
Yeah, probation. And they were like, you owe. And so I was just like, okay, whatever. You know, how am I going to do this? And so instantly, and I'm not unique. You know, this happens right. to a lot of people. And if you've got kids, child support doesn't go away. That's a responsibility. So you have all these things that are piling up and waiting for you. And guys need to be okay with riding a bike. You need to be okay with riding a bike.
Absolutely.
And you can get a bike at the pawn shop for $20. If you need to hustle to get your $20, hustle, I don't mean sell drugs.
That's right.
Hustle, I mean go pull weeds. Go pull some weeds and say, hey, can I do your yard for this much money? You can do that. I've done it. I have asked people, heck, I worked in your yard. You've given me yard work. There, so you can act, now you know I'm not lying.
I know. I was there.
You have got to be willing to do whatever you have to do.
That's right.
But guys who say, I don't have a car, I can't get a job, it's for the birds, man.
Yeah, man. It's life on life's terms, not like you said, not on your terms or my terms, but just kind of, you know, need to get out there and just letting them know that this is just one of many stepping stones to a greater destination, I guess you might say, you know, and even this person that you and I both know pretty well, like, boy, you know, I can just see, man, you know, this person's going to college finally after taking a break and going to college, doing well in college. And man, I can just see, you know, he seems like, oh, well, this class leads to this degree, which leads to that degree, which leads to, you know, and then you can kind of see the path. But a lot of times these guys don't see the path.
Yes.
They don't see it. We told them as parents, we told them in the penitentiary as whatever counselors, we tell them again in a halfway house, maybe a job developer or something of that, you know, but some folks just don't, it their timeline of seeing the path that starts with the making the next right decision. Right.
Yeah. It's weird. It's like a misunderstanding or it's like a disconnect when they see riding a bike or walking to work as unsuccessful and I think that's the delusion of not recognizing where you are presently, mm-hmm. because presently you're at home not doing that. So that would be a step up.
Or God forbid, get into some sort of relationship with a person that does have the car. Hold on a minute. Don't laugh. That was a clean question of 24 years of experience. I know what you're thinking, but I'm actually thinking behind that one person. But anyway, that happens.
Yeah. I mean, just, I don't want to knock it that it's, I don't want to encourage people to jump into a relationship because they need a ride to work. No, no. But you see it all the time. It's like, hard, she's yeah. got a car. She's got a car. She's doing really good.
Mm-hmm.
She'll pick me up. She's met her at the meeting.
She's a caregiver, caretaker. Yep, she'll pick me up, this and that and the other. When you think like, hey, well, if this girl is such a good girl, lady, and if she had a 10-speed like yours, where would y'all be right now? Oh, you know what I mean? Something to watch out for. And again, not to pick on women, but sometimes women will get into these positions where they need some kind of security.
Yeah.
And they'll take up with a person, man or woman, but they'll take up with somebody to help with that. And And man, it always comes at a high price. Always. It did in the joint and it does out here in the street.
That's it. If you end up in a situation where you're able to help each other and there are some benefits to it without compromising your beliefs and the things that are really important, like your sobriety, your safety, your sanity, and stuff like that, then I support it. And I'm the same way with relationships and sobriety and when early sobriety. If the person's healthy and if recovery is coming first and all of that, then you're an adult. You do what you want to do. But if it's become your higher power and it's become the priority of your life, you're in a bad spot and you're asking for trouble. So that would be the same thing. If you're only with this person because of the perks of the benefit or of the relationship, then just like you said.
Or it causes you to turn a blind eye toward certain aspects about that person or their situation or their family or whatever. And this other thing just kind of fills in for the something else you might have noticed, but you're not going to notice it because your Maslow hierarchy needs is kind of compromised. So you're going to make a choice that might not be good for you based on that. And so, yeah, that just the other reentry issue, you know, and or guys that want to get back and running in a nice car and they want to get it back in black real quick. And then they'll do a deal. And they'll start getting back into crime again. Like, I tried it, Mr. Cameron. I was good for a couple of months, man. But, you know, it just wasn't happening quick enough for me. Like, you know?
Yeah. And that was why I left. That was why I left the area after I got out. It was because the temptation was there. It was offered. And it was very attractive. You know, a good amount of methamphetamine that would just be loaned to me. And you can make a lot of money. You make a lot of money really, really quick. But thankfully I was in a place where I was able to see past it and see that, well, the last time I attempted that, it got me to where I am now. Wasn't too happy about those results.
Right.
And this is also a good segue, what you were saying about it's a good segue into the residential thing because I was living with a girl that I was in a relationship with for a lot of the years that I was in trouble. I'm different ones. You know, I would live with girls I was dating and, or really whoever would let me sell drugs were where they lived so I could stay there. Otherwise I was out on the street and people will get out of treatment and get out of, I worked with a family who this was happening. The girl would get out of treatment and go live with her boyfriend again. Her boyfriend never got sober. Nothing changed while she was gone. Right. So she went and spent all this time in treatment and would go right back to the drug house. But I love him. He loves me. Even if that is true, you're going right back to where all of your demons lie. You know, and so these people who go away and then come back and go right back into this really unstable situation, like, well, I don't have anywhere else to go.
Right. Well, they do. But it's just really hard because they want that comfort and that familiar situation.
Yeah, because a halfway house, you have your options. You have your state halfway houses where you're ordered to go. Mm-hmm. You have your shelters, you have your independent halfway houses, which is what I went to. It was like $100 a week. And they always give you the first week free because you get in, get work, and they know you probably don't have that up front. And then you have sober living. Sober living's for someone who has a family that's willing to provide resources that are more ample. Sober living's not cheap. So you've got some options. And then what else? Am I leaving something out?
No, I mean,
with your folks.
Yeah. Right.
Some people do that, but So it's not a, it's not really necessarily appealing to go to a halfway house. Because, again, I'm better than that, right?
Yeah, but a few moments ago, you were in an institution, you know?
Yeah.
In an institution. Now, you know, now let's start this journey and try to do it correctly. And, you know, and in the federal system, you're serving, you're sentenced halfway, you're serving free. You're still doing time. It's just community corrections. So that lasts whatever it is, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months, now a year. Some folks are getting a year in these halfway houses. You know, you still need to, I like it because you're still serving your sentence, but you're not free. You have the illusion of, you know, you can chew gum, you can do some other stuff with your money, but you're still serving your sentence. So
when you leave for a portion of the day now.
Yeah.
So you just have a curfew like from after 5 a.m. and then before 9 or 10 or what?
So yeah, you have a master list of everybody who's there and their job. And so you run it 24 hours a day. There's people that have night jobs. That one in Midland, Dismas Charities of Midland. And there was that hotel, it was a Hilton on Wall Street, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And so we'd go there. I'd show up there 2 and 3 in the morning to the hotel, making sure this guy was working, you know, and I would check the halfway houses work, right? We'd come in like a thief in the night for these surprise inspections, take a look at where it says he's supposed to be at and is he there, you know, so, or she there anyway, but yeah, you can work a night job. You can work a day job.
Yeah, and it's not. Next, what were you saying?
I was going to say something. I know I've said this to you before about the cleaning business, but I've been saying this to contractors. You know, they can go to the federal halfway house. They can meet the job developer and say, "Hi, my name is Bruce. I own company X. We do these things. I understand that you have a labor force pretty much that lives here. And I would, you know, here's my tax ID. Here's my, you know, all my stuff for my company. And if you can provide transportation and pick the guys or pick everybody up and bring them back, that's even better. That's fine with them as long as you have insurance on the vehicle and you have a business and whatever else. So yeah, just another idea where these people are wanting to work. They need to work. And because of the transportation issue, it sometimes stops them because of the bus and public transportation. So anyway.
Yeah. And if anybody is watching, who's never thought about doing that, you can find some real talented individuals in those places, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I remember the guys that gave me opportunities, I've never forgotten those people. And I still talk to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my first pretty good job, like my first salary job. That company even contacted me a couple years after I left and tried to bring me back to run a location. And I didn't accept it because I was in a good spot and I had some things going on. But
yeah,
it was, you know, they went out on a limb to even give me a shot. They really did. And it meant a lot to me and I'll never forget it. And I worked my tail off for them for an amount of money that your everyday guy would not have done. He would not have done the work I did for what I was getting paid. And I'm not resentful at all. I'm still grateful for that. What I make now and knowing what I was getting paid for that, still grateful.
Right.
Because I hadn't earned that. You know, it was somebody who gave me a shot. And I know a lot of other guys who are really successful and really sharp. And they've been in that position where someone could have come along and who needed some workers,
mm-hmm,
and cherry picked some really good dudes.
Yep.
So if you're willing to take that risk and you're looking for a way to give back to the community, that's a really good way to do it. And I'm pretty sure you get, I think you've told me that there are some benefits to that, no?
There, yes, particularly for state inmates, I think you can get some tax credit for having felons or even felon folks working for you. There used to be this thing called Project Rio back in the day, and it was really good. And then folks could get tax benefits from that, you know, from hiring felons. So it's just it's not worth hiring felons to get the tax benefit. You're hiring felons because, you know, they're there, you can help. Most of them are going to come to work sober. And they're going to be grateful because they're still doing time, you know, and then once they finish their halfway house time, you can renegotiate another contract or whatever, keep them on. I've hooked up several companies in the past with workers, and it's always been a pleasure, you know, to see folks get engaged. So,
yeah. The folks who go into a halfway house, your federal folks, what do you see that helps them the most? Is there something that you see aside from just working and following the rules? Do you see any of those offenders, the successful ones, do you see them doing anything differently that the other folks are not doing? And if so, what?
Yeah, they're going to engage in at a minimum of positive peer support. Okay. Positive peer support can be a sober friend. Maybe sometimes it's family. We would hope if it's a recovery group, if it's a 12-step group, if that applies, we would, you know, those, but they're engaging in church or, you know, Celebrate Recovery, or, you know, they're engaging relationally in a positive way with either friends or a church or family or whatever. And they're starting to build that community. And because it's so easy to think you can do it on your own. It's so easy. That's part of the trap. And fact is, you can't, you know, it takes people, you need people in your life to do it.
Yeah. The community is a big deal. And the people who don't are usually the ones who say, well, this is boring and there's nothing out there for me, and I may as well go back to what I was doing before. If you don't get out there, that was the hardest part, was getting out there and meeting new people. But there are places to go, and there's nowadays a lot more resources than there was before.
Yeah, but still, it's just that corrective thinking. Man, I just got to say this. So hopefully one of my territories was Houston. And so God is a large halfway house. It's near the Minute Maid ballpark. It's this whole warehouse district, and it's surrounded by a chain link fence. It's amazing. Hundreds of people are living there way away. So I'd be working with a guy, and I'd do the pre-release. So I'd go into a penitentiary in Beaumont, and I do the pre-release class. And I'd have 100 guys there and say, hey, everybody, my name is Bruce Cameron. I'm going to be, you know, working with you guys once you transition from the institution to the halfway house. And, you know, I want to meet with you today to let you know painfully clear what we're expecting of you while you're serving the backside of your sentence in the federal halfway house. And we break it down, man, curfews, this, that, job developing, this, that, what, home confinement eligibility. I mean, everything, Neil. Everything in clear detail. And so, you know, the meeting would be over, and a couple of guys there, they thought I was funny because I knew Paul Wall and I knew Pimp C and I knew Swisha House and all this crazy crap that I know because of the job, right?
Yeah.
And everybody wanted to be a rapper. Yeah, man, I'm going to be, selling my, mixtapes. It was back in the day with mixtapes.
Yeah, dude.
Woo, I just dated myself. But anyway, right, oh, I got my mixtapes on. I'll be going to the club and just, whoa, stop. Wait, what do you mean? You know, I'm not trying to take away your dream of being a rapper, but what are you going to do the first 2 weeks in the halfway house? You know, well, I'm going to be a rapper. No, you're not. You're going to get a job. We're sending you back to prison.
Right.
So, but man, it's like, you just, so it is like, you know, you just have this opportunity to get out there and you're still going to be that rigid in your thinking that you're still going to do it your way. And you're just not, you know. So and anyway.
That's the other thing is I hear that argument a lot is this isn't what I want to do for the rest of my life. And I said, well, that's great. Because guess what? You don't have to do this for the rest of your life. What do you got there?
Paul Wall, y'all. Paul Wall, H-Town.
You know,
dripping like red. Paul
Wall, and one thing that drove me crazy is his goatee or whatever it is. I've got to tell you, that's one.
It should. Yeah, no, it drives me crazy too.
He finally got rid of it. He grew a whole beard. He looks much better with a whole beard.
He does.
A full beard. But
there you go.
Yeah, these guys that say, I don't want to do this. Dude, you don't have to do this, but you do have to show that you have gainful employment and you do have to pay bills.
Or even what did this guy do? Yeah, nobody sees what he did to get to where he got.
Right.
You know?
You're exactly right. There's a lot of people. Who is it? I think it was I can't remember. There's some famous hip hop artist who worked in a grocery store.
Oh yeah.
I can't remember. But and there's not just one of them. There's several of these guys. Oh, okay, Tyler the Creator.
Yep.
He worked at Walgreens or something.
Yep.
And it's funny to hear him talk about it, but
yeah.
It didn't go well.
There's a UFC fighter that works at a Verizon store. But he's a good fighter, so it's like, okay. But yeah, so it's that magical thinking. It's called the criminal thinking error of super optimism is another one, you know. And but anyway, reentry, yeah, it's tricky, multifaceted, and the person needs accountability, and that's where folks like yourself and others and myself help hold these folks accountable to their next goal.
Starting point. Got to start right though.
Yeah, man. For sure. Or get close to it and then correct. So
yeah.
Okay, man. Well, good, man. That's good discussion on reentry. Cause it's, you know, a lot of people just don't understand how complex that is if they've never A, done time, or B, whatever it is I did. But
yeah, and that's a lot of it, the adjustment and thinking coming from that environment back out here and all the anxiety that comes with it and making that adjustment.
Hey, I used to tell them, I've done more time than you. I'm like, what do you mean? 8 hours a day, 5 days a week minimum. For 24, 25 years. You know what I mean? Going in and out of these prisons, you know.
Yeah.
Especially when the first part of it, I was probably working 60 some odd behind a fence, you know, hours a week behind a fence. You know, I'm doing this time. You know what I mean? I just self-surrender every night. What was it? I furlough every night and self-surrender every morning. That's what I tell the guys. And they would laugh. You're so full of stuff, Mr. Cameron, but it's true. Yeah. Spending a third of my life, the other third I'm sleeping. So, I mean, that's just something that, you know, it's strange for even for me to get my head around, but it's good.
Yeah. Good talk.
All right, then. Well, folks, another fantastic show here today, Concierge Coaches Show. And Neil, how can folks reach you and our social media?
They can find our show on the Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook, And on Instagram, you can find us at concierge_coaches. And you can find me at elevatedlifestyleacademy.com and Elevated Lifestyle Academy on Instagram and Facebook.
Excellent. And I can be found on conciergecoach.net. So with that, we'll bid everybody a great afternoon. Stay safe, everyone. We'll see you here next week. Take care.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.